Hello, Capital Region. This is the Hudson Mohawk Magazine on WOOC 105.3 FM, broadcasting live from the Sanctuary for Independent Media in Troy, New York. I'm your host, always have and always will be, H. Bosch Jr.
And I'm Chris Kelly. Today, WOOC correspondents Mark Dunley and Dave Pueblo discuss the conclusion of a thrilling two-year trial in which Dave was charged with trespassing charges related to a protest against the AIM pipeline.
Afterwards, labor correspondent Willie Terry brings us interviews with newly elected officers of the Troy's NAACP. Following Labor Talk, we'll learn about the legacy of MLK and the origins of the upcoming holiday with the interdisciplinary Professor Tamu Chambers. Didn't I say that right? How about that?
And later on, we'll be talking with Amy Halloran of the Soul Cafe. But first, let's start off the show with some rapid-fire local headlines.
Okay. In a celebration of the life and legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King, Memorial Observance and Beloved Community March will take place at the Empire State Plaza on Monday, January 21st, MLK Day. The theme of this year's event is King's Vision, humanity tied in a single garment of destiny, and it will feature guest speakers, presenters, performers, and more. All right. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo announced Thursday he is directing state agencies. This is a good piece. He's directing state agencies to help furloughed workers impacted by the partial government shutdown. The Department of Labor has been ordered to provide increased support to workers who are looking for unemployment insurance benefits. Also, the Office of Temporary and Disability Assistance will be helping those working without pay to apply for public assistance benefits. Okay, for those of you just tuning in, you're listening to WOOC's Hudson Mohawk Magazine on 105.3 FM.
To learn more about this program and how to support the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Okay, in our first segment, in 2016, our fellow Hudson Mohawk Magazine correspondent Dave Pueblo and three other people temporarily stopped construction of a controversial gas pipeline right next to Indian Point Nuclear Power Plant. By staying inside the power pipeline for 16 hours, he didn't smell good when he came out, but anyway. More than 2 years later, the court finally ruled on their case.
Here on WOOC, and we're talking actually with the WOOC correspondent, Dave Pueblo, who's also been quite active in the climate change movement. Dave, in the last year, has been involved in two major court cases involving his protests at various gas pipeline constructions, one out in West Roxbury, Massachusetts, and one in the town of Cortland here in New York State. Dave, maybe just quickly explain to people what brought you to do the civil disobedience at these gas pipelines.
Well, I've been involved in the anti-fracking activism community for a number of years. And when Governor Cuomo eventually took the stand of not allowing fracking, or I should say high-volume fracking in New York State, the industry that had already pretty much pillaged Pennsylvania focused more on creating pipeline structures to get gas from the source in Pennsylvania across to different locations. And this is for power plants, but their main goal is for liquefied natural gas terminals so that they can export it. Once they can do that, then the game changes in terms of how much money they can make from the gas.
Maybe do you want to briefly explain to people how you actually block these pipelines?
Sure. I'm going to back up a little bit. So the pipeline that we're talking about specifically is the Algonquin Incremental Market Pipeline, and it's broke it up into three parts, even though it's really one gigantic long pipeline. By breaking it up into three different projects, they evaded some federal oversight requirements, environmental impact statements, that kind of thing. And so both locations where I was arrested were really part of the same pipeline. One was West Roxbury, Massachusetts, which is a suburb of Boston, and the other one is Peekskill, New York, which is it's basically 100 feet from the entrance to Indian Point Nuclear Power Plant.
And I assume you feel that building these gas pipelines threatened life on the planet with climate catastrophe?
Yeah. In both cases, we were seeking out the necessity defense. The argument was, in each case, threefold. One is the clear effect of or clear impact of methane production on global warming. Second one is the emissions that come from the transportation of the gas itself through the pipeline structures and the compressor stations. And then the other one is the clear danger to the communities where these pipelines go through. So in Peekskill, as I mentioned, it's right next to the nuclear power plant. And as we showed through expert testimony, the blast radius for that type of pipeline would be in excess of 8,000 feet, and it would basically obliterate that nuclear power plant, and you could kiss New York City goodbye.
And I understand that if methane leaks into the atmosphere, that it's somewhere like 80 times more potent short-term as greenhouse gas as compared to, say, carbon.
Correct.
And so did you physically climb down inside these pipelines? Did you sit in front of the bulldozers?
Yeah. So the first one was actually in West Roxbury. That one was a high-profile case because it was in an urban center. The state of Massachusetts and the city of Boston had both tried to stop the pipeline, and it had been pushed through anyway. And there were celebrities involved. So Corinna Gord, Al Gore's daughter, was also in this trench. Basically, it was a trench in a roadway in a neighborhood, and 23 of us climbed down, lay down in there, and waited for the police to eventually remove us. Another person who was there was Tim DeChristopher, who I've forgotten what the number of the bidder. You know, he was the anonymous bidder who broke up the auction for public land a number of years ago and ended up going to jail for that.
Yeah, we've interviewed Tim DeChristopher here at WOOC a couple of times. So I know that you actually, I guess, sort of won in West Roxbury on the necessity defense, and then the judge gave sort of a little twist to the ruling. In the most recent one, though, you ended up not having to serve any jail time. But what was the importance of the necessity defense, and what is the importance of the success of these cases?
Well, so the process for the approval of these pipelines goes through the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission and then various state agencies. And FERC, as it's known, especially has been known as a rubber stamp machine. It does not reject these pipelines. In fact, the way that the funding for FERC is structured, it makes its money. It gets its funding based on the things that it approves, which is kind of sick. So when you have that process, even if you file, and this term is going to be relevant later on in this discussion, even if you file as an intervener against a particular pipeline, you really have no power. You can't stop it. And when you're going through legal means like that, you are going to have to resort to a direct action. And the necessity defense basically may allow you to do that. It's very rare for judges to allow you to use it as an actual defense in a trial. And when they do, it's even more rare for you to win. But we need to set that precedent.
And do you think this is now going to be used by more advocates and protesters across the country?
Oh, yes. Yes. So I'll just talk for a couple seconds about both cases. In West Roxbury, and I'm doing this to show some of the basic tactics that the state and the other parties use to try and pull the rug out from under the protesters. So in West Roxbury, they kept us coming back and forth to court for a long time, like many months, extending into years.
And you're not living in West Roxbury, so
correct.
It's a bit...
So it's quite a commute. In that one, it also drew the Spectra attorney. Spectra Energy is the company that was putting in these pipelines, and that attorney did not want to be in that courtroom, and he did not want to make any statements, but eventually, under duress, he was forced to. And his most notable quote was, "There's no safety plan because it's safe." Okay. Mm-hmm. Basically, Spectra had given no safety plan to the fire department or any other emergency resources in Boston. And so that was just egregious. But it's typical for how Spectra was handling these pipelines all over the place, including in Peekskill.
So anything different about the Peekskill case?
Well, the thought that I was trying to finish. Okay, in West Roxbury, what the state did at the last minute was they lowered the charges. Okay, that takes away the defendant's right to a jury trial. If we can get in front of a jury, we're almost always going to have a really good chance to win because we're appealing to common sense. Okay. And
so they want the judges to hear the case.
Exactly.
Based on the law and not based on, hey, I don't want this thing in my neighborhood. What do you mean it's safe and there's no need for a safety plan?
Exactly. But it varies from state to state. So in Massachusetts, when they did that, we didn't even get a bench trial. We basically got a hearing of the type that you would get if you had a speeding ticket. Okay. So but even with that, the judge, because we stuck with the same judge through it, she could have pawned it off on somebody else, but she stuck with it. And at the end of it, she said that I find you not guilty by reason of necessity. But since it was that low of a charge at that point, it does not carry precedent. In New York, it was a different sort of situation where she allowed us to use the necessity defense, and we basically had to prove that there was a imminent danger, that the action that we took had a clear chance of success, and that we had gone through every legal means prior to this to avert this. And she found it that on two out of three of those, we met the challenge. But on the last one, that we hadn't gone through every legal means. And the thing that she cited specifically is that we, the three people that were charged, as opposed to the groups that had been involved, the entire community that had been involved in trying to stop this pipeline from the get-go, had not filed as interveners. And while that was technically true, it really was kind of irrelevant. So
you mean interveners with the FERC
exactly,
handling of
with
the case?
With FERC. And so there are a lot of things that are involved with this, though. She is a first-year judge, and this could be a signature case for her, you know, her career. So it doesn't surprise me that she blinked, if that's what she did.
Right. But I'm also noted in the pattern that they both are women, and you think that women judges perhaps are more sympathetic to the need for people to take action to save the community?
Perhaps. I don't know that I would necessarily go that far because they're very different. So Kimberly Regazzo, the judge in Peekskill, she's in her 30s, has two kids. This is her first year as a judge. She was a prosecutor in the Bronx. The other one, Marianne Driscoll, actually had come out of retirement to handle caseload. And so but I don't know these people personally, so I don't really know what their motivation was.
So will Mark Ruffalo be playing you in the movie?
I don't know. If we'd won, maybe there would have been a movie, but we'll have to wait and see.
Okay. So and we're almost out of time. You know, what are next steps, particularly trying to oppose, FERC, this federal, bureaucracy? And any closing thoughts?
Sure. Well, even though we lost with this, in our case in Peekskill, town of Cortland, really, we were hearing previous cases referred to. So there's precedent that was involved, and they were looking for things to follow. So in our case, we are now part of that system. And in the next case, and I'm sure there will be a case, and maybe I'll be involved in it, they will be drawing on the idea, all right, so they met these requirements, but they failed on that last one. Was that really relevant? And should they win or lose? So we'll find out.
And we've been talking with Dave Pablo from WOC. This has been Mark Dunley. Dave, one last thing, if people want to find out more information about these ongoing efforts, some good websites to look at.
Oh, you're quizzing me on the websites. I would look for Sane Energy Project. And even though I hate Facebook, that's probably the easiest way to find it. So start there.
And that was Mark Dunley speaking with Dave Pablo. We should note that though the prosecution requested 300 hours of community service per defendant in any form other than environmental work, Judge Kimberly Regazzo released all three defendants with no penalty.
Okay. Now, in our second segment, Triple E's Education, Empowerment, Entrepreneurship, all right, today's guest or our guest is Ms. Ayana Pringle, award-winning publisher an honor student, and we are so blessed to have her on the show. And please, everybody, listen to this phenomenal interview from a great, great human being and a lovely young lady. Hello, everyone. This is H. Bosch Jr. with another segment of the Triple E's, Education Empowerment Entrepreneurship. Today's guest is Ayanna Pringle, an honor student who's written an article that will be published in a book February 28th, 2019. Welcome, welcome to the show, young lady.
Hi.
Well, hi back, all right? Wait till you see this little superstar to be. So I'm going to dig right in and ask you some questions, and you just relax and do your thing, all right? Okay?
Okay.
Okay. All right, so what is your name and where are you from?
My name is Ayanna Pringle, and I'm from Albany, New York.
All right, from Albany, New York. Okay, good. And what is the name of your school you attend?
The name of the school I attend is North Albany Academy.
North Albany Academy, okay. Now let me ask you real quick, how many brothers and sisters you have, Ayanna?
I have one sister and three brothers.
One sister and three brothers, and you are the oldest, youngest, or middle?
I'm the youngest.
The youngest, okay. All right, so now, how long have you gone there to the school that you go to?
I've been going to North Albany Academy since pre-K, and now I'm in fourth grade.
Okay, great, great. And what's your favorite subject, young lady?
My favorite subject is math.
Math, okay, great, great. Now, do you have, I just asked that question. You have older siblings, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And I understand you have a nice, loving grandmom who really, really loves you and supports you and encourages all this good stuff that you're doing. You want to give Grandma a shout out?
Thank you, Grandma. I love you.
Oh, okay, okay. Well, let me dig into some more questions. Tell us about the award that you are getting ready to receive.
The award I received is just like a little mini story that I made up, came up with, which is just like a 100-word story.
Okay, and how did you come up with that?
I just...
What inspired you?
What inspired me is when I, like, watch scary movies and like to get my cousins to play around.
Isn't that something? Okay, so then what is the mini saga and what inspired you to, once again, write a mini saga, okay?
What inspired me is... Cause I like a lot of scary things, and I go like to amusement parks and go to haunted houses. And around Halloween last year, we went to the amusement park, and a lot of scary people and stuff were coming around and scaring us.
Okay, now let me ask you this: what is your scariest movie, of all time? Because you say you like scary movies, right? Well, what's your last scary movie you watched? Halloween? What's the last scary movie you saw?
I think it was Halloween.
Okay, okay. Yeah, and you like that?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was kind of good.
Okay, okay. Good then, good. So now let me ask you then. You like to write, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah? Okay. So what other topics do you like to write about?
I like to write fun ones.
Okay. Give me an example of fun ones.
Like kids playing on the park and...
Okay.
Sometimes I like to write a little bit of sadness in it where kids get bullied and someone helps them out and give them a little kindness.
Okay, now, let me ask you this. When did you find out you were going to get the award, and how did you find that out? Who told you?
I found out in school when my teacher gave me a paperback, and she told me that me and a couple other students in my class were able, our book that we wrote was going to be in a new book that's going to be published.
Really? Okay, now, you didn't even have an idea. She surprised you, right?
Yes.
Wow. So when you came home and told Mom, what did she say?
She said, that's great.
Okay. And you know what? I got to give Mom a shout out, too, all right? Because she's sitting there. I'm thinking, hi, Mom.
Hey.
So this was your first award you won, right?
Yeah, something like this for being my book being published. Yes, this is my first one.
Okay, and what other kids were involved in the project?
Like my best friend, Nalia, a couple of her kids in my class
too. Okay, okay. Well, and I got to give a shout out to your cousin, all right? Your cousin Talia. Hi, Talia, who was on the show and did really well. And she gave you texted me and said some encouraging words. She said, just relax and be yourself. And trust me, you're great. I told you this was easy, right? You know? So are you excited about the article being published? And what do you want to do after?
Yes, I am very excited. And what I want to do after is maybe make up a longer story and do another
one. Or maybe
one.
Write a book. How about that? Right? It's never too early to start writing a book. You know, I see that in you. You know, if you're writing now and people are noticing your work, I see a book in you. So you just keep on keeping on. So explain a little bit more about what happens in the story. And then where did you get the idea from? Like, was it just sitting on the couch, watching a movie, or talking to other friends? Look at that big Kool-Aid smile, too.
Where I got the idea from is when I watch, like, a lot of scary movies, is some of them is, like, kids that walk, go around trick-or-treating sometimes, and they go to the wrong house and get stuck in there, and then that's when monsters start coming after them, and, like, they trying to run out, but they can't because the door was locked, and that's when they start getting scared, and then some monsters in some movies kill them, but I didn't do that because I'm only a fourth grader. I didn't want to put that in my story.
Okay, great, great. And I was just getting to ask, what grade you're in? The fourth grade, right?
Yes.
Okay. Wow. And what's your teacher's name so you can give her a shout out?
Miss Keller.
Miss Keller. Okay. Shout out to Miss Keller. You are doing a fabulous job. I mean, you are truly, truly, this is our future, and you are planting seeds of knowledge for them to carry us on to the next generation, and I'm so, so proud of that. So let's talk a little bit about what's some of the things you like to do when you're not writing, okay? What's some of your hobbies?
Some of my hobbies is playing on my phone.
Playing with your phone, okay.
I like to flip around the house.
Okay.
Which my mom doesn't really like, but
trust me, all right, my mom didn't like it either. That's an age-old tradition, all right? The only thing, we came up in a different era. Our mom didn't like it, and we got whipped, all right? Yeah, but, you know, I understand. What do you like to do with your friends?
When I see them in school or at the park, we all, like, play around, play tag, and just do music fees on our phones and stuff.
Until next time, folks, it's about the triple E's. Education, empowerment, entrepreneurship. And remember this, don't hear about making a difference. You need to be about making a difference. This is Inez Bosch's baby boy, H. Bosch Jr., doing what I'm made to believe. And thank you again, Ayana. This is one of my, I've done over 72 interviews, and this is one of my favorite, all right? Because this is special. So God bless you. Thank you, thank you, thank you to Miss Ayana Pringle. And once again, happy belated birthday to you. You do Albany and the entire Capital District proud. And also to Mom and Grandmom, Miss Folks, you're doing a fantastic job. Continued blessings.
For those just tuning in, I'm Chris Kelly.
And I'm your host, H. Bosch Jr. You're listening to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine on WOOC 105.3 FM, Troy, New York.
To learn more about the Hudson Mohawk Magazine program, to listen online and learn how to support the Sanctuary for Independent Media, check us out online at mediasanctuary.org. If you have comments, suggestions, or a sour bone to pick, you can text us at 518-888-3004. Also, be sure to tune in 7 to 10 weeknights for Jazz Sanctuary, a wonderful celebration of all that is creative, dedicated to supporting jazz in the Hudson Mohawk region.
All right, in our third segment, WOOC Roman correspondent Willie Terry attended the Troy, New York branch of the NAACP Officers Installation for 2019-2020 at Chapel and Culture Center in Troy, New York. In this segment, he interviewed the new presidents, Renee Powell, Ann Pope, NAACP Northeast Regional Director, Jonah Shen, Treasurer Jessica Ashley, Vice President Billy Carter, Board Member and Troy Mayor Patrick Madden on the future of the Troy NAACP branch.
Yeah, this is Willie Terry from WOOC 105.3. I'm here at the Troy, New York State branch installation ceremony of the NAACP offices. And I have right here my guest, Ann Polk, who has been one of the key person pulling the organization together in Troy. And Ann, been about 2 years now, right?
Yeah. Right well, now? We actually started the planning process about 2 years ago, where the president, Hazel Duke, said that the branch had to be reactivated. Because the meetings were not being held. It was out of compliance with the NAACP constitution. So we started back then planning with Reverend Oscar McLaughlin and Billy Carter and others. And then last year, in January 18, in January, we actually started the formal reactivation process with getting the members in, getting the memberships up, and somewhere around maybe about 8 months in, we were reactivated. We had the number of memberships that we needed. We were holding meetings regularly, and they had been involved in some of these state activities. So today is a momentous day for me. I'm just overjoyed, grateful that it has happened. I'm grateful that we have a new president. I'm grateful that Billy Carter stayed with us all the way through, and so I had to give him credit for that. We have to give credit where credit is due, and I think that our new president will do a wonderful job.
So, Ann, if you had to give the new officers one piece of advice, what would that be?
I would say, first of all, to attend the meetings and to follow the Constitution and bylaws and work together. Work together. No personal stuff. Don't bring in your personal issues. Work together for the good of the organization. Always let that be your goal.
All right, thank you, Ann.
Thank you.
And I have one of the new officers. She's the vice president, Jessica Ashley. And Jessica, tell me your feelings on this day.
Well, it's a happy occasion. As had been stated, it's been a couple of years since we were able to find a president to represent the Troy chapter. And now we have that president, and I believe that Renee will be everything that we had hoped she would be, and I'm just very happy about that.
If there was a issue that the NAACP should work on, what would be one issue that they should be concentrating on?
For myself personally, I do believe that there are still situations where injustice, where individuals in the court system, dealing with the court system, the state, the local court system are being abused. They are not being sentenced fairly. People don't know their rights. People are made to plead guilty to crimes or accused of crimes and are made to plead guilty to crimes they're not guilty of because they're threatened with heavy sentences and whatnot. I have a great deal of concern about that, and I just feel that we need to have court watch to be aware of what's happening in the court and also to share with individuals their rights, because most times people don't and are not given their rights in the court system.
All right, thank you, Jessica, and good luck. And this is Willie Terry again here at the NAACP installation ceremony. And I have as my guest one of the key organizers of bringing the Detroit NAACP back, Billy Carter. And Billy, how do you feel now?
I am elated. It's been a challenging year, but right now to see the fruits, to see we couldn't be in any better of a position right now. The NAACP, the springboard into forward progress and action. There's a lot of work that needs to be done in Troy. There's a lot of inclusion that we need to push for. There's a lot of opportunities that the community, the people of color, need to be included in. Troy is prospering, and we need to make sure that as the tide rises, that it lifts all of us. And so we don't want for one side to be lifted and another side down. Opportunities that present themselves to the community, we're here to push for that. And equal rights for everybody. It's time. One of the questions was asked, is the NAACP still needed? And we all know the answer. And so I was just thankful and grateful that God provided me the energy to do this. And with Renee as our new president.
So, Billy, now I know you was acting president for the 2 years. Uh-huh. Now you're still on the board.
I'm on the board. I'm on the executive committee. We look forward to helping Renee with her leadership. And I had a vision. Miss Ann Pope had a vision. We're also thankful to Reverend Oscar McLaughlin. We're thankful for Reverend Cornelius Clark, Reverend Linda, Jessica Ashley, some of the past presidents. We're grateful for those that came before us, particularly Miss Marguerite Treese. Judge Randolph Treese was her son. Miss Treese, she told me that in 1958, she was a guinea pig. And what they would do was, when the NAACP started, that she was the one that they would use, because she was a mixed race, she was the one that they would use to try to rent housing from people from white people. She would be the one that they used. And the president at the time would be waiting in the bushes. And what they would do is she would try to rent apartments and see if the land were going to be discriminatory. So she sacrificed a lot. And in service to the NAACP, it's about sacrifice, about giving of our time and to try to make things better for everybody. So we're just excited.
Okay, just one more question. I said if there's one issue that you think the NAACP should focus on, what would be one of those issues?
My opinion is voting. And not only voting, but to get people of color into the on the city council, the county legislature, the police department, the fire department, and also to get people of color on the staffs of City Hall and the county legislature and the district attorney's office. Miss Mary Pat Donnelly, we did a lot to support her, and we're hoping that she will include people of color on her staff, not only as attorneys, but in the staff. When people of color walk into offices of our legislators, of our officials, we don't see us. We really need to see us at all levels. It's time we had officials here today, and I have met with them in the past about, I walk into the office, I don't see anybody of color. So where do they get their advice about colored people's issues? Well, who do they talk to? And so they need somebody on a regular basis there. So my number one issue would be inclusion, voting, and getting people of color into these city, county, state, and even Tonko's office is another one that I when I go to his office, I wish he had more people of color.
All right, thank you. I have, as one of the guests, one of the executive board members, June High. And June, what is your feeling on this day that the NAACP is finally coming together?
Yeah, I think it's great. I think it's great to just be able to come together as a community and be able to address some of the issues that we see in our communities and be able to help those who are kind of the least last and the lost. And that I think with the coming together of this group, we have kind of strength to be able to tackle those issues together and have an impact on the city of Troy.
If there's one issue, in your opinion, that the NAACP should focus in on, what would be that one issue?
I think one issue that comes to mind, I think, would be maybe education and being able to provide education, not just any, but a solid and decent education that all kids can come and learn and be able to grow, and that education wouldn't be just to those who have the resources, but that it would be available for all people and people from all different backgrounds and socioeconomic class, and that they'd be able to have that opportunity as well.
Yeah. All right, thank you. And I have Mayor Madden. And I just want to ask you, Mayor, you've seen the ceremony of the NAACP today. What is your reaction now to that?
I'm delighted that the NAACP is getting this chapter up and running again. I know it had been dormant for a few years. Took a lot of effort by a number of people to get the wheels going again. I know Renee, she's a doer. She'll get things done. So we're delighted to see this life breathe back into this organization. I look forward to working with them.
And I guess, you know, if they get together and organize, they, maybe, you know, they'll be coming to you, you know, asking to sit on committees and do other
sure.
things.
Yeah, I'd love to have those conversations. Be delighted.
All right, thank you, Mel.
Thank you.
Yeah, this is Willie Terry. I'm here at the Troy Branch NAACP Installation of Officer Ceremony, and I have as my guest the newly elected president, Renee Powell. And Renee, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you, Willie.
I know it's been a long time coming for this day.
Yes.
And so what's your feeling on this?
I am very excited about this day. I'm just excited about the possibilities of things that we can do. I'm excited about the strategic plan of the national organization. It's going to be a game changer. So I'm excited about learning more about it and implementing it in our community.
And Renee, just tell me some about yourself, you know, for the people who don't know you.
Okay, well, someone told me the other day I have an accent. I don't know what they're talking about, but I'm originally from Washington, D.C. I moved to the area in year 2000, following my husband who took a job at RPI, and we've been here ever since. I am currently a realtor, and now the newly elected president of NAACP at the Troy branch.
Of all the things that the NAACP could get involved in, you know, probably a lot of things, what would be, in your opinion, the key thing that they should be getting involved in?
Education. Not just education of the students, but education of the individuals, education about your civil rights, education about being a civic person, education about being a responsible person and being responsible and respectful of your time and commitment to your community.
And I'm just curious, you know, I know people get involved in organizations, different things push them into that, but what pushed you into getting involved in this process?
You know, when we first came to the area, I was looking for NAACP because it was a national organization. In my growing up, I was always involved with different types of organizations like the National Council of Negro Women in the Washington, D.C. area. So when I came to this area, I looked for that same type of thing. And it took a while to find it. And when I finally did get to the meeting and I saw that membership was needed, I said, this was my calling. This is where I need to be. This is where I need to help out.
Okay. Thank you and good luck.
Thank you, thank you, thank you to Mr. Terry for another Knock Out of the Park segment. All right, once again, thanks, Mr. Terry, for his continuous coverage of events that are so important and impactful to our community. And many thanks and congratulations to the new officers of the Troy's NAACP chapter. Much needed and long, long overdue.
In our next segment, Lewis Copeland interviews Professor Tamu Chambers about the legacy of Martin Luther King Jr. and the origins of the holiday in his name.
Good afternoon. My name is Lewis Copeland. I'm the Interim Vice President for Enrollment Management and Student Development at Hudson Valley Community College. It is my honor today to interview Professor Tamu Chambers in honoring the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King's birthday, an iconic giant of a man born on January 15th, 1929. Professor Chambers, as one of your many areas of expertise as an historian, what are a few of the frequently overlooked facts about the origin of Martin Luther King's birthday?
Lewis, I'm really glad that you asked that question, because many are unfamiliar, or they have forgotten the challenges that occurred regarding the struggle of establishing Martin Luther King's birthday. And days after the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King, in 1968, Stevie Wonder and Black Congressman John Conyers introduced a bill to make the slain activist's birthday a national holiday. and Wonder became the Bill's most prominent celebrity spokesperson until the holiday finally signed into law in 1983. Often he performed at rallies and alongside Coretta Scott King to drum up support. He also composed a new version of Happy Birthday in honor of Dr. King. Wonder, Conyers, and many others commemorate nationwide every third Monday Dr. King's birthday in January. It is important to listen closely to the words of a direct action and when Stevie Wonder's song. And one thing he wanted to make significant is to know that, you know, it doesn't make much sense. There ought to be a law against anyone who takes offense at a day in your celebration in honor of Martin Luther King. Having an opportunity to share a heartfelt message about Dr. Martin Luther King, the American dreamer and philosopher, is a privilege and an honor. I am a daughter of a Baptist preacher of Sherman Chambers and granddaughter of Donnie Young, who was a Bible-toting, church-going spiritual woman. Both father and grandmother shaped my worldview at a young age. Many are unfamiliar of the challenges that occurred regarding the establishment of the Martin Luther King birthday. During lectures in African American history and African history, students are informed about the struggle for equality. Students are informed that many African Americans and other social justice advocates willingly shed blood, risking lives while being bitten by dogs and sprayed with water hoses that were so powerful they were enough to strip the bark from trees, or protesters for justice while their bodies hit the concrete and began rolling along similar to a bundle of timber weeds, while bodies are met with additional blows from police batons and often jailed. And between 1958 and 1967, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was arrested 30 times for demonstrating and participating in nonviolent protest against segregation. I can't help but, Louis, I'm just so passionate about this because I think everyone should know and have the opportunity to really understand how we got to where we are today with honoring Dr. Martin Luther King. For example, during his 1963 imprisonment, he wrote a letter from Birmingham Jail, which became the manifesto of the civil rights movement. The W.E.B. Du Bois noted that the problem of the 20th century as a problem of the color line. And in spite of enormous achievements, it is apropos to reintroduce and restate that the problem of the 21st century is a reflection of Du Bois' warning and the interconnectedness that King's prophecy of the three evils, the evil of racism, the evil of poverty, and the evil of war and the world. In addition to the overview of a challenging and successful life that is dedicated to all humanity, his books provide insights regarding the hope of his beloved community. During the month of celebrating Dr. King, the segment examines his messages, Why We Can't Wait, and Where Do We Go From Here, Chaos or Community, and a contemporary message of the drum major instinct, a sorely needed message of self that produces authenticity of one's purpose and recognizing an obligation, and referencing Matthew 22, Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. In so many ways, Coretta Scott King reminds the nation that struggle is a never-ending process. Freedom is never really won. You earn it and win it in every generation.
Professor Chambers, once again, thanks for sharing key components of Dr. King's legacy and informing the listening public that the Sermon King's Voices are also available on YouTube.
Thank you. It's been my honor.
Thank you, Louis Copeland and Professor Chambers, for this enlightening and important discussion on the origins and legacy of Dr. King. Okay, in our fifth segment, Amy Halloran talks with Shauna Goldman about the Oakwood Soul Cafe.
Hi, I'm Amy Halloran, Food Security Manager at Unity House, and I'm here with another food diary. Today, I have with me Shauna Goldman, and we're going to be talking about Oakwood Soul Cafe. Thanks for coming, Shauna.
No problem.
That's great. So, Oakwood Soul Cafe started a few years ago.
Yeah, you started it, right?
I started cooking community meals there, and then after a while, it morphed into this great thing that I want to know more about. And so can you tell me about its general setup and take it from there?
Yeah, so right. So you were doing the community meals, and it was a fundraiser for Oakwood, which I should say is a community center. It used to be a Presbyterian church. It's a little white church building on the corner of 10th and Hoosick across from the Stewarts. And so you were doing these dinners, and then you're like, okay, I'm a little burnt out. And we're like, oh, let's just get a community involved in making these dinners, right? So it's been like 5 years now or something where we've been doing this. And so every month, a different group of folks gets together and plans a meal, sources a meal, and then cooks a meal. And then anybody can come, and it's by donation, $3. And some people give more, and some people don't give if they don't have it. I've definitely come and not given at times. And we've gone anywhere from, like, this month we're doing hearty soups and stews to we've had, we often have like a Dominican night Marisa likes to do every year, and we've had just food from all over. So it's just been really great.
Yeah, it's a great connecting space. It's a really nice church basement where you can hang out and have fun, meet your neighbors.
Yeah.
Definitely meet people that you might not ordinarily intersect with. As small as Troy is, this is definitely a great place for people to come as they come into town or try to reconnect with themselves or the city in another way.
Yeah, and I think what's great about Oakwood is that it's in the middle of a bunch of neighborhoods, and a lot of different people use the space. We have over 25 organizations using the space now, but people don't necessarily know each other. So Soul Cafe is an attempt to kind of make those interactions happen and those connections, and we find that that's happening more and more, so we're real excited. And sometimes we do a Soul Cafe it's a fundraiser for the community center, but sometimes we do a special fundraiser. So one of the programs that Oakwood does is we have a food pantry every Saturday. It's open from 9 to 11. And we've been noticing lately that we've been running out of food. And also with the government shutdown, we've been worrying about what's going to happen to food stamps. And we know that I think a lot of states, they found some kind of loophole where people will pay out the February food stamps in January. So I think some people are going to wait for February and then not get their, they're going to forget that they already got their food stamps. And then we don't know what's happening in March. So we're trying to prep for that by having some extra resources. So this month we're going to donate the proceeds for the Soul Cafe to the food pantry.
That's an excellent, excellent thing, because this is a very real threat. People are leaning on SNAP, working families, all kinds of people who do not have the money to pay for food are getting SNAP benefits, and these SNAP benefits are for real. Not going to happen soon.
Yeah.
So that's really great to know that you're looking for some insulation to make it happen.
The other thing that I know my dear friend Kizzy would be irate with me if I did not mention is how we source the food. And I think this started from working with you and Ellie, who's not in Troy anymore.
And now we're talking about the food for the meal.
Yeah, sorry.
So
thank you.
We're going to move away because the food pantry is stocked mostly by the Regional Food Bank and a few other sources. But the meal is also this spider web pulling in food, and it's really fun.
Yeah, so we give ourselves a budget, but we try to source most of the food through food that is – you know, still good but not able to be sold. Like at the food co-op, they sometimes give us their seconds. We go to the farmer's market and get seconds there. So, and we really try to use really healthy ingredients. And sometimes we get most of the food donated, and it's food that would have gone into the waste stream otherwise. But it's really good food, I promise, and it gets cooked.
It's awesome food. Yeah. It's totally great. And if you're just joining us, I'm here with Shauna Goldman. We're talking about the Oakwood Soul Cafe and a little bit about the Oakwood Community Center in general. So I know that the Soul Cafe is staffed by volunteer groups who come in, and I think Honest Wait is doing this one, right?
Yep.
This one is happening Monday night, which is Martin Luther King Day. I think there might be some special activities, but we're not sure what those are. That day is going to be...
So I think because we were wondering, like, should we try to do something extra? But because there's so much going on already in the community that people are already organizing, we didn't want to pull attention away from that. So, you know, we're going to try to maybe show or just play a recording of the speech towards the end of the halfway through the evening, and maybe give people like a chance to just reflect on what, you know, this day means to them. And we've been trying, I think we've been getting a little bit more political with Soul Cafe, just through the nature of being able to give the donations to different groups. So we did a donation where we worked, the Soul Cafe was hosted by Troy's Sanctuary City Group, and they gave money to families who were being impacted by the new, or not new, but by ICE coming
in. Yeah, that's really fantastic. They're doing some grassroots heavy lifting.
And so it was really great. And so some of the families who received the money came and talked about what they had been going through, and were really grateful for all the support through Sanctuary City. And so it's given an opportunity for people who come to Soul Cafe to participate in their community in a larger way and talk more about what's going on in their community. Primarily it's a place to come together and share food and make connections. And the other thing that's really great about Soul Cafe is the kids. You know, it's just everybody brings their kids. And even if they didn't know each other before, there's something about that space where
they're
kids
doing
just,
laps.
They're just running around the building. And it's great because, not the building, but the space where we're all eating. And it's great because a parent can know that there's all the adults there. Lots of eyes. And they can just kind of eat and talk with friends and not be,
you know, stressed out.
Yeah, for that
yeah.
couple hours. So I think it's a nice break for parents.
It's a really terrific thing. Some other groups I know that have gotten the benefit of the dinners, like Black Diamond Dancers.
Yep. So we had this great group for the last year, for a year pretty much, dancing at the community center. And it was started by just a mom who wanted to get her kids dancing. And they're not there at the community center right now, and we're trying to figure out how to reincorporate. We don't exactly have the space for a full-on dance team to meet nightly, so I think they may have found another space, but we want to find a way to support them if possible. But it was really wonderful. They came, they cooked the meal. The parents cooked the meal, they danced, they performed, they brought all of their family there, and it was a really special evening. And I know you were asking about Honest Wait, so it's easy to get distracted, but Honest Wait is doing Monday night's Soul Cafe. So it's going to be people who work at the co-op are putting it all together, and Honest Wait has been pretty supportive of Soul Cafe, giving us donations on a regular basis. And then, so it's really cool. Just somebody reached out to me, and I think he knows through just being involved in Troy and the bike rescue, he knew of Soul Cafe, and he said, I want to coordinate this. So, and it's really wonderful that more and more groups are just reaching out to us and saying, I want to do a Soul Cafe. And that's awesome.
That's so great. Yeah, that's John, who
yep.
I know loves to cook big yeah. meals, as we've cooked together for bike rescue
yeah,
dinners.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's great.
Yeah.
So it's going to be hearty soups and stews with an international flair. So I think it's going to be perfect on this cold weekend to warm up with that.
Yeah, and I think it'll be a great end to the different Martin Luther King Day activities. Another you know, one last coming together yeah. for the day, a place to rest your thoughts.
Yeah.
I love that idea.
And if you've been out all day at activities, you don't have to cook. Exactly. I think that's why we do it on Monday nights, because you've been cooking all weekend and preparing for the week, and who has the energy on a Monday night? So we do it the third Monday of every month.
And what's the time on it?
From 6 to 8, but usually you need to get there by 7 to get enough food.
Yeah.
Because we often run out.
It's hard to predict when you have a no reservation system. It's really hard to predict how much. And you're not serving food the next day.
Right.
Hard to guess.
Yeah.
How to have enough.
I think we do have a Facebook event, so you can go to Oakwood Community Center, Oakwood Community Center's Facebook page, or you can find just Oakwood Community Center. Soul Cafe has its own Facebook page, so there's lots of ways.
But it's not just for groups. Individuals are key to making this happen too, right? So if you're an individual who wants to come and wash dishes, prep, set tables,
please do.
So how do people
how do
you
get involved?
Connect?
Yeah, so you can email me, sgoldman78@gmail.com, or you can just find us online at Oakwood or on the Facebook page. We have a Soul Cafe Volunteers Facebook page. You can just stop by the center, there's somebody there most evenings or weekends. Try to contact me. Or through the Facebook page, or just show up on Monday and ask. We love volunteers, and we need volunteers, especially for the cleanup. But also, there's a core group that meets once a month and makes sure we have somebody in line to do the next month. So we would love more people.
That's awesome, and it's really fun.
Yeah, and it's really evolved, and it's really exciting.
Yeah, that's great. So thank you so much, Shauna, for being with me and talking about Monday night, Oakwood. We're talking Monday, January...
21st.
Thank you. 6 p.m., 331 10th Street.
Yep, 331 10th Street. Enter on the Hoosick Stride. There's a parking lot, and... then also people park down on like 9th or whatever, but 8th Street. But and come in and tell us you want to volunteer. And if you want to volunteer that day, I'm pretty sure we're going to be cooking most of the afternoon. So you can just show up if you have some spare time because you have the day off of work. Come and help us cook or set up. We'd love to have you.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Hope to see all you invisible people out there. And thanks again for joining me. This is Amy Halloran with The Food Diary, your food security case manager at Unity House.
Okay, thank you, thank you. So be sure to head over to the Oakwood Community Center this Monday night, MLK night, for Soul Cafe at 6 p.m. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that concludes our show. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Hudson Mohawk Magazine. I'm your host, HBJ, better known as H. Bosch Jr.
And I'm Chris Scully. Remember to tune back in tomorrow and every weekday at 7 a.m., 9 a.m., and 6 p.m. to get your daily dose of local news. You can also get that dose through our Hudson Mohawk Magazine podcast and Facebook page. Also, be sure to tune in 7 to 10 weeknights for Jazz Sanctuary, a wonderful celebration of all that is creative, dedicated to supporting jazz in the Hudson Mohawk region.
Okay, before I close out, once again, rest in peace, Barbara Lundy. As a reminder, WOOC 105.3 is produced by local volunteers. If you're interested in volunteering with our radio efforts, shoot us an email at info@mediasanctuary.org or just stop by one of our weekly meetings on Monday nights at 7:07 p.m. They are extremely off the hook, held right here at the Sanctuary for Independent Media. Until next time, folks, I'm your host, H. Bosch Jr. Thank you for tuning in.